In the following program, you will hear Mr. Ernest Goodwin, counsel for the Civil Rights Federation, who will be heard in an interview with Roger M. Baldwin, National Director of the American Civil Liberties Union of New York City. This program will be carried on by Mr. Goodwin and follows now.
I present to you for a brief interview this afternoon the Director of the American Civil Liberties Union with headquarters in New York, Mr. Roger M. Baldwin, who is here in Detroit to attend the sessions of the Conference of the Civil Rights Federation of Michigan in the Book Cadillac Hotel. Mr. Baldwin has spoken this afternoon at a luncheon at the hotel presided over by Bishop Edgar Blake on what is happening to the Bill of Rights in Washington. He is to be interviewed on that subject now. Let me ask you first, Mr. Baldwin, from your experiences at Washington and throughout the country, would you think that our liberties of free speech and press are more under attack today than they have been?
Mr. Goodman, it is inevitable that whenever a country like ours is endeavoring to protect its neutrality in a world at war, that we should have fears and intolerances easily aroused. I've been all over the country lately, from the Pacific coast to the Atlantic, meeting audiences of all sorts of people, and I have found universally a fear of foreign influences, of foreign propaganda, of what is regarded as subversive to American institutions. That, I think, is one of the conspicuous intolerances of our time, which those of us who are interested in civil liberties necessarily have to take account of.
Mr. Baldwin, do you think this fear of foreign propaganda of which you speak is justified by the facts?
No, it's perfectly clear to me that the real issues affecting our democracy have to do with the alignment of forces in our own country, the struggle between capital and labor, the struggle between one set of political opinions and another, not between our homegrown notions of democracy and some foreign conception of government. After all, the forces that represent these foreign influences are small. The communists are a mere handful. The German-American Bund represents far fewer numbers. The other forces that might be regarded as anti-democratic are represented by mere fractions of our population. And I think the hysteria and the fears, which affect so many of us, are rather the result of our own instability, the fact that we've got an economic crisis we haven't solved, rather than any real danger imported from Europe.
And may I ask you this, Mr. Baldwin? What tendencies in Congress seem to you to be most hostile to your conception of civil liberties?
Well, I should say that the tendency most conspicuous in Congress, and of which we are all aware, is represented by that extraordinary committee of the House of Representatives on Un-American Activities, headed by the Honorable Martin Dies of Texas. It has been performing now for 2 years, it has a lease of life for another, and it has made perfectly evident, I think, to all fair-minded citizens in the course of its operations that it is concerned primarily with pinning the red label on liberal and progressive causes in the country, thus attacking the very process of democracy itself. For democracy means change. Progressive and liberal instruments are the means for change.
But would you say that the Dies Committee could do a useful job in the exposure of foreign influences if it changed what you regard as its unfair procedure?
Its unfair procedure has been one of the causes of the most significant and widespread criticism throughout the country. It has been condemned even by the President of the United States. But I do not believe that a committee of Congress, even if its procedure were reformed, to give the accused, for example, a chance to reply to their accusers, could proceed on the basis of examining un-Americanism and do a useful job in any such terms as the Dies Committee proceeds upon. For those terms, after all, are based upon the notion that anything or progressive or liberal, wherever you can find the slightest radical influence, is somehow or other un-American.
Mr. Baldwin, you have been in Washington a great deal of the time pertaining to your work. Do you think the Dyes Committee represents the prevailing attitude of the Congress?
Unhappily, I'm afraid the Dyes Committee does represent these fears of which I've spoken. And the best example of that is the fact that the Congress has already passed, at least the House of Representatives has already passed, a series of bills which might be parallel to the Alien and Sedition Acts which Thomas Jefferson wiped off the statute books 140 years ago. These bills would create the crime of sedition by mere language or publication. They would attack the rights of aliens to think and speak, to criticize or discuss even the American form of government. They would do what we have never done, even in these 20 chaotic years since the World War, by establishing a sort of quarantine around our alien population of 3.5 million. The theory, of course, is that these aliens, not being American citizens, are somehow or other dangerous to the Republic. But I think all the evidence is contrary to that assumption, and that the bills, both in the field of sedition and the restrictions on aliens, are totally unnecessary.
Well, the question that's often asked us is whether the existing law is sufficient to protect American democracy, or is any additional legislation desirable?
Mr. Goodman, even Mr. Dyes can't think up any legislation to put on the statute books in addition to what we've got. We have our conspiracy statutes. We have laws that would attack anyone who does a single thing overtly against the American form of government. The restrictions on aliens' opinions are among the most stringent in the world. I think that no further legislation is necessary to maintain our democracy against any form of attack, except by speech. And one does not want to attack speech.
We hear considerable about labor's rights and civil rights. Do you think that there is any relation between the attack on radicals and aliens and the attacks on legislation for the protection of labor's rights?
I think that there is no denying the fact that the same forces that play upon Congress in opposition to radicalism, foreign propaganda, and aliens are also endeavoring to undermine the gains that have been made by law, by Congress, by decision of the Supreme Court in recent years, guaranteeing to the workers of this country the right to organize and bargain collectively. And you will note, I am sure, that the same forces which are back of the Dyes Committee, which are promoting the legislation to which I speak, are also endeavoring to undermine the basic principles of the National Labor Relations Act, which, whatever you say about it, and there's a great deal to be said about it in criticism, is a charter of liberty for trade union organization, protecting workers against interference or coercion by their employers as they should be protected. Thus, you will see that you cannot separate the rights and liberties of one section of the population from another, that when aliens and radicals are attacked, inevitably labor is attacked, and eventually all of us are attacked.
In painting a picture to us today of the scene at Washington, you have been discussing largely the congressional aspect. Are there any other branches of the government outside of Congress which interfere with civil rights?
In our experience over the last 5 or 6 years of the New Deal administration, I can say that the federal departments at Washington, from the White House down, have on the whole been exceedingly solicitous of the protection of civil liberties. We have had fewer issues and cases affecting those departments than in years past. But in recent months, with the new tensions created by the war situation abroad, by the increasing hostility to communists throughout the country and indeed throughout the world, the Department of Justice appears to have moved in the direction of suppressing, by various criminal prosecutions, a political movement, the communist movement, which is so widely feared and detested. I think the Department of Justice is entirely justified in proceeding against sabotage, in espionage in any form. But when it gets into the field of subversive activities, a very loose phrase which each of us would define differently, it is on pretty shaky ground, shaky for the maintenance of civil rights. The prosecutions here in Detroit, just brought by a federal grand jury, are a case in point. Prosecutions which rest upon a highly technical interpretation of an ancient law. And prosecutions which look, even though they may be technically justified, as if they were primarily directed at unpopular political opinions.
You have mentioned during the course of your answers to my questions communists and Nazis. Now, that is a subject upon which many people are quite confused. Do you think that movements like the communists and Nazis, which support foreign dictatorships, should be allowed to carry on their propaganda in the United States without restrictions?
I think the only restrictions upon communist and Nazi and fascist propaganda, like all other propaganda, should be at the point where the propaganda results in some overt acts against the public peace and order. That was always the traditional American conception of civil liberties, that you did not interfere with any movement unless it broke out into some kind of acts. We would be in favor, of course, of stopping all private military drill. Indeed, we've got a bill in Congress which would accomplish that object. We would prosecute or endorse the prosecution of anybody in these movements who engaged in any form of criminal activity. But we do not think that their free speech, their right to print and distribute papers, to hold their meetings, to conduct their organization, should be interfered with on this very practical ground. That if you create any machinery for stopping their mouths and preventing them from printing and distributing literature, that same machinery, as all history shows, will be eventually used against the rest of us.
I think you have answered many controversial questions which undoubtedly have arisen in the minds of many of us in Detroit. Let me ask you a final question, which I think many of us would like to have your answer on. What attitude do you think that patriotic Americans should take toward the preservation of our liberties from attack?
The patriotic conception of American liberties has always been that even the most detested minorities, whatever they may be, racial, religious, political, or economic, should be allowed freely to function on the theory that majority rule requires minority rights. For the majority of today was the minority of yesterday. And the minority of today may be, one of them anyhow, the majority of tomorrow. That is the only peaceful method of resolving the political and economic conflicts amongst us. Any other method leads straight toward dictatorship. We desire, as patriotic Americans, to avoid all forms of dictatorship and to keep our democracy functioning. It can function only as we are solicitous for the protection of minority rights, not on the ground that we love some of these minorities, but on the ground that we are jealous for the protection of our own rights, that the process of democracy itself, the most patriotic conception we can conceive of, and America's great contribution, early contribution, to the progress of the world, should be preserved.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have just listened to an interview with Roger N. Baldwin of New York, director of the American Civil Liberties Union, who is here in Detroit to attend the sessions of the Civil Rights Federation of Michigan at the Book Cadillac Hotel today, and who has just been speaking to us on the subject, What is Happening to the Bill of Rights in Washington?
Ladies and gentlemen, this brief interview of Mr. Roger M. Baldwin, director of the Civil Rights Federation of New York City, was conducted by Ernest Goodwin, counsel for the Civil Rights Federation of Detroit. This is WJR, the Goodwill Station, in the Tower of the Fisher Building, Detroit.